September 1888. In the districts of Whitechapel in the East End of London, an evil slasher terrorized the impoverished districts, targeting female prostitutes who lived and worked near the slums. He slit their throats before mutilating their bodies, with some of the victims having their internal organs removed. Rumors that the murders were connected intensified in the coming months, and numerous letters were received by media outlets and Scotland Yard from individuals purporting to be the murderer. The public came increasingly to believe in a single serial killer known as Jack the Ripper, mainly because both the extraordinarily brutal nature of the murders and the media coverage of the crimes. Extensive newspaper coverage bestowed widespread and enduring international notoriety of the Ripper, and the legend solidified. A police investigation into a series of 11 brutal murders committed in Whitechapel and Spitalfields between 1888 and 1891 were unable to connect all of the killings conclusively to the murders of 1888. However, five victims, Mary Ann Nichols, Annie Chapman, Elizabeth Stride, Catherine Eddowes, and Mary Jane Kelly, were known as the Canonical Five, and their murders between August 31st and November 9th of 1888 are often considered the most likely to be linked. These murders were never solved, and the legend surrounding these crimes still capture public imagination to the present day. In the mid-19th century, Britain experienced the influx of Irish immigrants who swelled the populations of the major cities, including the East End of London. From 1882, Jewish refugees fleeing pogroms in Tsarist Russia and other areas of Eastern Europe migrated into the same area. The parish of Whitechapel in the East End became increasingly overcrowded, with the population increasing to approximately 80,000 inhabitants by 1888. Work and housing conditions worsened, and a significant economic underclass developed. 55% of children born in the East End died before they were 5 years old. Robbery, violence, and alcohol dependency were commonplace, and the endemic poverty drove many women to prostitution to survive on a daily basis. In October 1888, London's Metropolitan Police estimated that there were 62 brothels and about 1,200 women working as prostitutes in Whitechapel, with approximately 8,500 people living in 233 common lodging houses within Whitechapel every night, with the nightly price for a single bed being 4 pence, and the cost for sleeping upon a lean-to rope stretched across the dormitory being 2 pence per person. The economic problems in Whitechapel were accompanied by a steady rise in social tensions. Between 1886 and 1889, frequent demonstrations led to police intervention and public unrest, such as Bloody Sunday in 1887. Anti-Semitism, crime, nativism, racism, social disturbance, and severe deprivation influenced public perceptions that Whitechapel was a notorious den of immorality. Such perceptions were strengthened in the autumn of 1888 when the series of vicious and grotesque murders attributed to Jack the Ripper received unprecedented coverage in the media. So now we're going to get into the actual murders that he committed, that he supposedly committed, I should say. There were a large number of attacks on women in London at this time, so it's really uncertain as to how many victims were actually attacked by the same individual. But the Metropolitan Police did conduct an investigation of 11 separate murders occurring from April 3rd, 1888 to February 13th of 1891, and these were known as the Whitechapel murders. It is very inconclusive whether all these murders can be linked to one person, but five of the 11 murders, known as the Canonical Five, were strongly believed to be victims of Jack the Ripper. Experts point to deep slashes of the throat, followed by excessive abdominal and genital area mutilation, removal of the internal organs, and facial mutilation as the modus operandi for the Ripper. First two files in the Whitechapel murders, Emma Elizabeth Smith and Martha Tabram, were not included in the Canonical Five. Smith was robbed and assaulted in Osborne Street, Whitechapel, at approximately 1:30 a.m. on April 3rd, 1888. She had been bludgeoned about the face and received a cut to her ear. A blunt object was also inserted into her vagina rupturing her peritoneum. She developed peritonitis and died the following day at London Hospital. Smith stated that she had been attacked by two or three men, one of whom she described as a teenager. However, some authors do attribute her death to gang violence in the area that's unrelated to the Ripper, but the press did link this attack to the other murders that occurred during this time. Tabor was murdered on a staircase landing in George Yard, Whitechapel on August the 7th of 1888. She had suffered 39 stab wounds to her throat, lungs, heart, liver, spleen, stomach, and abdomen, with additional knife wounds inflicted to her breasts and vagina. All but one of Tabram's wounds had been inflicted by a bladed instrument such as a penknife, and with one possible exception, all of the wounds had been inflicted by a right-handed individual. The brutality of this murder, the lack of motive, and the closeness to the location and time of the murders of the Canonical Five led police to link this incident. However, the type of wounds she suffered led many experts to believe that this wasn't a connected murder. 26-year-old Rose Milet was found strangled in Clark's Yard, High Street, on December 20th of 1888. There was no sign of a struggle. Police believed that she had accidentally hanged herself with a collar while in a drunken stupor, or she committed suicide. However, faint markings left by a cord on one side of her neck suggest Milet had been strangled. At the inquest into Milet's death, the jury returned a verdict of murder. Alice McKenzie was murdered shortly after midnight on July 17, 1889, in Castle Alley, Whitechapel. She had suffered two stab wounds to her neck, and her left carotid artery had been severed. Several minor bruises and cuts were found on her body, which also bore a 7-inch long superficial wound extending from her left breast to her navel. At 2:15 a.m. on February 13, 1891, P.C. Ernest Thompson discovered a 25-year-old prostitute named Frances Coles lying beneath a railway arch in Swallow Gardens, Whitechapel. Her throat had been deeply cut, but her body was not mutilated, leading some to believe that Thompson had disturbed her assailant. Coles was still alive, although she died before medical help could arrive. A 53-year-old stoker, James Thomas Sadler, had earlier been seen drinking with Coles, and the two were known to have argued 3 hours before her death. Sadler was arrested by the police and charged with her murder. He was briefly thought to be the Ripper, but was later discharged from the court due to lack of evidence on March 3rd. The Pension Street Torso. It was a decomposing, headless, and legless torso of an unidentified woman between 30 and 40 years old. She was discovered beneath a railway arch in Pension Street, Whitechapel on September 10th, 1889. Bruising about the victim's back, hips, and arms indicated that the victim had been extensively beaten shortly before her death. The victim's abdomen was extensively mutilated. She appeared to have been killed a day before the discovery of her torso. Now we should get into the Canonical Five. The first one of the Canonical Five is Mary Ann Nichols. Her body was discovered about 3:40 in the morning on Friday, August 31st, 1888, in Bucks Row, Whitechapel. Nichols had last been seen alive approximately 1 hour before the discovery of her body by Mrs. Emily Holland, with whom she had previously shared a bed at a common lodging house in Thrall Street, Spitalfields, walking in the direction of Whitechapel Road. Her throat had been severed by two deep cuts, one of which completely severed all the tissue down to the vertebrae. Her vagina had been stabbed twice, and the lower part of her abdomen was partly ripped open by a deep, jagged wound, causing her bowels to protrude. Several other incisions inflicted to both sides of her abdomen had also been caused by the same knife. Each of these wounds had been inflicted in a downward thrusting manner. 1 week later, on Saturday, the 8th of September, 1888, the body of Annie Chapman was discovered at approximately 6 a.m. near the steps of the doorway of the backyard of 29 Hanbury Street, Spitalfields. As in the case of Nichols, the throat was severed with two deep cuts. Her abdomen had been cut entirely open, with a section of the flesh from her stomach being placed upon her left shoulder and another section of skin and flesh, plus her small intestines, being removed and placed above her right shoulder. Chapman's autopsy also revealed that her uterus and sections of her bladder and vagina had been removed. At the inquest into Chapman's murder, Elizabeth Long described having seen Chapman standing outside 29 Hanbury Street at about 5:30 a.m. in the company of a dark-haired man wearing a brown deerstalker hat and dark overcoat, and of a shabby genteel appearance. Elizabeth Stride and Catherine Eddowes were both killed in the early morning hours of September 30, 1888. Stride's body was discovered at approximately 1 a.m. in Duffield Yard off Burner Street in Whitechapel. The cause of death was a single clear-cut incision measuring 6 inches across her neck, which had severed her left carotid artery and trachea before terminating beneath her right jaw. The absence of any further mutilations to her body has led to uncertainty as to whether Stride's murder was committed by the Ripper or whether he was interrupted during the attack. Several witnesses later informed police that they had seen Stride in the company of a man in or close to Burner Street on the evening of September 29th and in the early hours of September 30th, but each gave differing descriptions. Some said that her companion was fair, others dark. Some said that he was shabbily dressed, others said he was well-dressed. Ito's body was found on the corner of Mitrie Square in the city of London, 3/4 hour after the discovery of the body of Elizabeth Stride. Her throat was severed from ear to ear and her abdomen ripped open by a long, deep, and jagged wound before her intestines had been placed over her right shoulder, with a section of intestine being completely detached and placed between her body and left arm. The left kidney and the major part of Ito's uterus had been removed, and her face had been disfigured, with her nose severed, her cheek slashed. The police surgeon who conducted the postmortem upon Ito's body stated his opinion that these mutilations would have taken at least 5 minutes to complete. The extensively mutilated and disemboweled body of Mary Jane Kelly was discovered lying on the bed in the single room where she lived at 13 Miller's Court off Dorset Street, Spitalfields, at 10:45 a.m. on Friday, November 9, 1888. Her face had been hacked beyond all recognition, with her throat severed down to the spine and the abdomen almost emptied of all its organs. Her uterus, kidneys, and one breast had been placed behind her head and other viscera from her body placed beside her foot. About the bed and sections of her abdomen and thighs upon a bedside table. The heart was missing from the crime scene. Multiple ashes found within the fireplace of 13 Miller's Court suggested Kelly's murderer had burned several combustible items to illuminate the single room as he mutilated her body. A recent fire had been severe enough to melt the solder between a kettle and its spout, which had fallen into the grate of the fireplace. Each of the canonical 5 murders were perpetrated at night, on or close to a weekend, either at the end of a month or a week or so after. The mutilations became increasingly severe as the series of murders proceeded, except for that of Stride, whose attacker may have been interrupted. Nichols was not missing any organs. Chapman's uterus and sections of her bladder and vagina were taken. Eddowes had her uterus and left kidney removed and her face mutilated. And Kelly's body was extensively eviscerated, with her face gashed in all directions and the tissue of her neck being severed to the bone. Although the heart was the sole body organ missing from this crime scene. The vast majority of the City of London police files relating to their investigation into the Whitechapel murders were destroyed in the Blitz, or like the German bombings during World War II. The surviving Metropolitan Police files allow for a detailed view of investigative procedures in the Victorian era. A large team of policemen conducted house-to-house inquiries throughout Whitechapel. Forensic material was collected and examined. Suspects were identified, traced, and either examined more closely or eliminated from the inquiry. More than 2,000 people were interviewed, upwards of 300 people were investigated, and 80 people were detained. Following the murders of Stride and Eddowes, the commissioner of the city police, Sir James Fraser, offered a reward of £500 for the arrest of the Ripper. Investigation was initially conducted by the Metropolitan Police Whitechapel Division Criminal Investigation Department, headed by Detective Inspector Edmund Reed. After the murder of Nichols, Detective Inspectors Frederick Aberline, Henry Moore, and Walter Andrews were sent from Central Office at Scotland Yard to assist. City of London police were involved under Detective Inspector James McWilliam after the Edo's murder, which occurred within the city of London. The overall direction of the murder inquiries were hampered by the fact that the newly appointed head of the CID, Robert Anderson, was on leave in Switzerland between September 7th and October 6th, during the time which Chapman, Stride, and Edo's were killed. This prompted Metropolitan Police Commissioner Sir Charles Warren to appoint Chief Inspector Donald Swanson to coordinate the inquiry from Scotland Yard. At the end of October, Robert Anderson asked Police Surgeon Thomas Bond to give his opinion on the extent of the murderer's surgical skill and knowledge. The opinion offered by Bond on the character of the Whitechapel murderer is the earliest surviving offender profile. Bond's assessment was based on his own examination of the most extensively mutilated victim and the postmortem notes from the four previous canonical murders. He wrote, "All five murders no doubt were committed by the same hand. In the first four, the throats appeared to be cut from left to right. In the last case, owing to the extensive mutilation, it is impossible to say in what direction the fatal cut was made. But arterial blood was found on the wall in splashes close to where the woman's head must have been lying. All of the circumstances surrounding the murders led me to form the opinion that the women must have been lying down when murdered, and in every case the throat was first cut." Bond was strongly opposed to the idea that the murderer possessed any kind of scientific or anatomical knowledge, or even the technical knowledge of a butcher or a horse slaughter, in his opinion. To him, the killer must have been a man of solitary habits, subject to periodical attacks of homicidal and erotic mania, with the character of the mutilations possibly indicating satyriasis, or another word for hypersexuality. Bond also stated that the homicidal impulse may have developed from a revengeful or brooding condition of the mind, or that religious mania may have been the original disease, but I do not think either hypothesis is likely. There is no evidence that the perpetrator engaged in sexual activity with any of his victims, yet psychologists suppose that the penetration of the victims with a knife and leaving them on display in sexually degrading positions with the wounds exposed indicated that the perpetrator derived sexual pleasure from the attacks. This view is challenged by others who dismiss such hypotheses as insupportable suspicion. In addition to the contradictions and the unreliability of contemporary accounts, attempts to identify the murderer have been hampered by the lack of any surviving forensic evidence. DNA analysis on extant letters is inconclusive. The available material has been handled many times and is too contaminated to prove meaningful results. In terms of possible suspects, the police really couldn't find anything. They really just had to hypothesize with what they had. So, based on what they thought, the concentration of the killings around weekends and public holidays and within a short distance of each other maybe have indicated to many that the Ripper was in regular employment and lived locally. Others have the opinion that the killer was an educated upper-class man, possibly a doctor or an aristocrat who ventured into Whitechapel from a more well-to-do area. Unfortunately, anyone who was alive at this time is now long dead, and modern authors are free to accuse anyone without any need for supporting historical evidence. There were several letters that were sent to the police. Some of these had real advice about how to catch the killer. A lot of them were hoaxes, but there were three prominent letters that really stuck out in the eyes of detectives: the Dear Boss letter, the Saucy Jackie postcard, and the From Hell letter. The Dear Boss letter, which was dated September 25th and postmarked for September 27th of 1888, was received that day by the Central News Agency and forwarded to Scotland Yard on September 29th. Initially, it was considered a hoax, but when Edo's was found 3 days later, after the letter's postmark, with a section of one ear obliquely cut from her body, the promise of the author to clip the lady's ear off gained attention. Edo's ear appears to have been nicked by the killer, incidentally, during his attack, and the letter writer's threat to send the ears to the police was never carried out. The name Jack the Ripper was first used in this letter by the signatory and gained worldwide notoriety after its publication. Saucy Jackie postcard was postmarked October 1st, 1888, and received the same day by the Central News Agency. The handwriting was similar to the Dear Boss letter and mentioned the canonical murders committed on September 30th, which the author refers to by writing double event this time. It has been argued that the postcard was posted before the murders were publicized, making it unlikely that a crank would hold such knowledge of the crime. However, it was postmarked more than 24 hours after the killings occurred, long after details of the murder were known and publicized by journalists, and had been general community gossip by the residents of Whitechapel. The From Hell letter was received by George Lusk, who was a leader of the Whitechapel Vigilance Committee, and the Whitechapel Vigilance Committee was basically a group of citizens who came together to try to help the police to solve this murder case. And this was received by George Lusk on October 16th of 1888. The handwriting and the style is unlike anything of the Dear Boss or the Saucy Jackie letters and postcards. The letter came with a small box in which Lusk discovered half a human kidney preserved in ethanol. Ito's left kidney had been removed by the killer. The writer claimed that he fried and ate the missing kidney half. There is disagreement over the kidney. Some contend that it actually belonged to Ito's, while others think that it was just a practical joke. The kidney was examined by Dr. Thomas Openshaw at the London Hospital, who determined it was human and from the left side. But contrary to other newspaper reports, he could not determine any other biological characteristics. The nature of the Ripper's murders and impoverished lifestyle drew attention to the poor living conditions of the East End and galvanized public opinion against the overcrowded and sanitary slums. In the two decades after the murders, the worst of the slums were cleared and demolished, but the streets and some buildings survived, and the legend of the Ripper is still promoted by various guided tours of the murder sites and other locations pertaining to the case. For many years, the Ten Bells Public House in Commercial Street, which had been frequented by at least one of the canonical Ripper victims, was the focus of such tours. In the immediate aftermath of the murders and later, Jack the Ripper became the children's boogeyman. Depictions were often phantasmic or monstrous. In the 1920s and 1930s, he was depicted in film dressed in everyday clothes as a man with a hidden secret, preying on his unsuspecting victims. Atmosphere and evil were suggested through lighting effects and shadow play. By the 1960s, the Ripper had become the symbol of a predatory aristocracy and was more often portrayed in a top hat dressed as a gentleman. The establishment as a whole became the villain, with the Ripper acting as the manifestation of upper-class exploitation. The image of the Ripper merged with or borrowed symbols from other horror stories, such as Dracula's cloak or Victor Frankenstein's organ harvest. The fictional world of the Ripper can fuse multiple genres, ranging from Sherlock Holmes to Japanese erotic horror. Actually, here are a couple fun facts about Jack the Ripper. In 2006, the BBC History Magazine poll selected Jack the Ripper as the worst Briton in history. And also in 2015, the Jack the Ripper Museum opened in East London. It attracted criticism from both Tower Hamlets Mayor John Biggs and protesters. Similar protests occurred in 2021 when the second of two Jack the Chipper fish and chip shops opened in Greenwich, with some patrons threatening to boycott the premises. Now, thank you so much for listening to this. I hope you enjoyed this video. I hope you got some type of information from it. I really appreciate everyone who's supporting the channel. You know, y'all are the best. Definitely like if you enjoyed that. Subscribe when you're new to the channel. Don't forget to turn on my post notifications. Thank you so much. I'm out. Peace.